You are listening to the Winning Edge podcast, where each week we have a conversation with a different member of the Winning Edge Business Networking chapter located in Spring Hill, Florida.
Welcome to the Winning Edge podcast. This is Chris Chambers, and today we have the privilege and honor of having a discussion with Stephen Waske. How are you doing today, Stephen?
Man, I'm doing great.
And you've, you're in the Winning Edge podcast, or Winning Edge chapter as well, is that correct?
Yeah, only for a few months now. I think I started in August, maybe.
All right, let's talk about you. Who are you? Who is Stephen Waske?
Well, I'm a 36-year-old male. I like long walks on the beach, usually under moonlight, of course. No, I've got a wife, Ariel Hannah. We have a 9-month little girl at home, and I've been in the software business since we opened this company back in 2013. But I've been in technology for quite a while. My family was in technology when I was younger, and my wife stays home with our kids. This is just our little it's our way to build our home, build our family, right?
7 months. So I have an 8-year-old, a little girl, and a 3-year-old boy. They sleep through the night now. 7 months, I don't know that they were doing that. Are you getting sleep at night?
I'm not ready to talk about it.
Okay, fair enough.
sometimes, right? Sometimes. Yeah, I think she woke up 4 times the other night, which...
That's tough.
I had a pretty angry wife. I can't use curse words. I tell you how she really feels.
For sure. It's the B&I way. No cursing.
That's right. No cursing.
So you live up in Spring Hill then as well?
Yes, I'm in Spring Hill. The office is in downtown Brooksville. So if you're familiar with the downtown Brooksville area, we're sitting about Caddy Corner from the courthouse. We're next door to Rising Sun. We're on Main Street.
You grew up in Spring Hill?
Yeah, I've been there since 1985, I think.
High school alum?
Probably four. Springstead.
All right.
Yes, sir.
They are the Fighting
Eagles.
Fighting Eagles. All right.
Mm-hmm. Don't mess around.
Aside from software engineering, what other hobbies or interests do you have?
You know, I don't have a whole lot of hobbies because I spend most of my days at work. I think that's what most of us do as small business owners, right? Sure. You spend 7 days a week at an office. But really, it just, you know, we're part of it. We're part of a church that we enjoy. Spending time with my family. We'd like to make some barbecue, smoke meat on the weekends. That's it. I mean, we stay pretty low key, man.
Now, your business is called Atlas.
Atlas Results.
Atlas Results. Mm-hmm. And what kind of results do you get your clients?
Great ones. Mm-hmm. So we look to do a few things, right? When we go to a client's office, we build software to help automate business processes, right? And that means a lot of things to a lot of people, but really to simplify it, we're looking to take all the different tasks that you do during your day-to-day operations and figure out ways to use software and technology to streamline that so that you can spend your time doing what generates the most value or revenue for your company, right? Every day that we all go to work, there's a particular skill or set of skills that we use to bring our company revenue, or that we use for our company to drive value out into the marketplace, right? But that only makes up a fraction of what we do throughout the day. It only makes up a percentage of the time, you know. So as an attorney, your value is fighting on the behalf of somebody who's been wronged or is looking to achieve something or has a goal. But all the time that you spend putting data into a computer, right? If that takes up 25% of your week at the end of a week, that's 25% of wasted efforts. Right? It did nothing for your company. So what if we could put software or technology in a place that would mitigate that 25-hour, you know, that 25%, and that gives you an extra 10 hours of billable income for the business? What would that look like? Right? You're spending the same number of hours at work, but now you're generating 25% more revenue, right? That's huge.
So efficiency. You come in and either build custom software or find a way to customize something that's already there.
Yes.
To help the efficiency of the whatever the practice may be.
Exactly. In some cases, we'll just take two existing products and write an interface to make the two of them work together. You know, maybe there's a feature in product A that you need and a feature in product B that you need. We'll figure out how to get the two of them to communicate with one another so that they function as one product. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's all just about coming up with creative ways to figure out how to overcome some of these problems that really almost every one of our businesses face, right? At the end of the day, like, we all have these obstacles that we have to overcome in our business to find greater ways to be efficient or to find better ways to be competitive with the guy across the street running in the same services as I do.
Well, you mentioned this morning in our weekly meeting, you're looking for businesses that need help automating billing and automating invoices. Is that right?
Yeah. So I recently was speaking with a buddy of mine, who has a service business, goes out to homes, people are on a schedule, right? And he bills them out every month. So once a month, he's got to spend an entire afternoon going through, seeing who's paid what, who's on credit cards, who's on checks, who needs to get an invoice sent out, who needs to process online. And I'm like, man, why don't you automate that, right? There's, with technology today, there's no less than 1,000 ways to automate that kind of a process. It's been so people have reinvented that over and over and over again, right? Like at this point, it costs you next to nothing to implement that kind of a tool in your business, but it saves you, you know, in his case, it saves him, you know, a half a work day once a month.
Why do you think it is that a lot of businesses that have these kind of tools available out there aren't using them?
Well, they just don't know it exists.
Okay.
Yeah. And I think that's 90% of the time it's they don't know it exists. Mm-hmm. I think it's a very small percentage of the time that someone actually either knows it exists and doesn't want it, or someone knows it exists and they don't have a means to obtain it, right?
So you mentioned a second ago, you know, efficiency wise, you could take out 10 hours of current work time and add that back to their business. Is that the kind of results that you've seen for your clients?
So one of our first clients, right, we started off in government work, our first software, right, was a government application. And it was out in marketing and trying to sell that software that I said, you know, let me dip my toes into the private sector a little bit. The first software we did was for a home inspection company. They have home inspectors throughout the state of Florida, and the home inspector would go out to a home, do the inspections, scan it, send the docs into the main office in Tampa here. In Tampa, they would look over the documents, make sure it's legit, make sure it's good, make sure it doesn't have any mistakes. They're manager quality control, right? If it had mistakes, the home inspector would have to make some adjustments, scan it, send it back in. And they were doing between 6 and 8 inspections per day per inspector. We put together a software for them where all their inspectors could log into one location and choose from a library of inspection templates that match that particular inspection company's needs, their set of needs. And it managed a little bit more of the process, right? The customer putting it in, we're putting tracking customer information in the system, tracking what's been paid, what hasn't been paid. What insurance agency might have ordered the inspection. And so by the end of their first year, they increased their revenue by
80%.
80%? Yeah.
Wow.
And they actually experienced an increase in their customer service as well. So, you know, a lot of times when you go through a rapid period of growth in your business, customer service takes a hit, right? And anytime you have rapid growth, there's some lumps along the learning curve that you have to account for. That you can't account for, and you kind of figure it out as you go, right? You know, so you start a new process at work, you think it's the way to go. Because it's a new process and it's new to people, employees make mistakes, something gets forgotten, you know, and when that happens, it has an impact on customer service.
Sure.
Usually. But these guys had a significant increase in their customer service. They almost doubled the number of inspections they were able to complete a day. They were up to, averaging 14 inspections in a day because they reduced how much time it took to enter the data in the system, and their quality control process probably got the one greatest benefit if you had to break it down into individual functions, because they could just look at what an inspector puts in the system on the spot while the inspector's in the field and go, we need these adjusted. Mm-hmm. An inspector can change them, and that same day it gets sent back to the insurance agency. So, you know, it helped them build better relationships with the insurance agencies. It drove up better revenue for the company. I mean, all around, it was a huge win for them.
So you and I met, we did a one-to-one a couple of weeks ago, and one of the things that stood out in that one-to-one, you know, question I had, you know, what sets you apart from other software engineers maybe in the area? One of the things that you mentioned is you've been working with computers since age 12, like significantly working with computers.
I was young, yeah.
Okay. You can talk about that a little bit?
So when I was young, my parents, my dad really got into computers because he had this idea that technology was going to be the wave of the future, right? I don't know what gave him that idea, but apparently technology was going to be this hip thing that everybody got into. And he didn't want to be the dad whose kid knew more than him. So we started picking up computers. And at this age, I wasn't even 10, right? This was in the late 80s, mid to late 80s. And, you know, it was just a hobby to him. But as a kid, I took to it. And I, for whatever reason, I grasped it well. So he got into it deeper and deeper as a hobby. He made, I don't know if you guys remember bulletin boards, BBSs from back in the day. You have the little dial-up modem, make them sounds. Yeah, anyway, that's old stuff, right? He got into that and learning how to set those up, and then he started building computers. So he taught me a lot of that stuff, and I think I was 12 the first time I built a computer for him, right? And my dad was a cop, so he would go to work and kind of figure out what cop buddies needed a computer, and he would after work go down to Tampa, the wholesale shop, pick up parts, and come home, and I'd build his computers after I get home from school, and he'd take them to work and sell them. And a couple of years later, he opened a computer store, and he did well. We opened an internet company, so we had an ISP in the 90s, T1 in the office, for those nerds out there that know what that stuff is. And, you know, in 95, that was pretty cool, man. I mean, you had a lot of bandwidth at your fingertips. Nowadays, the average Roadrunner modem in someone's house would smoke what we had, right, you know, in the 90s, 20 years ago. but it was I had a lot of exposure to it at a younger age, so... you know, you're still at that period in your life where you're kind of absorbing everything that comes your way. Mm-hmm. You're not as maybe jaded as you get as we get a little bit older.
Right.
And
so, I mean, you've literally grown up with computers, from building the hardware to when the internet really started to explode. Yep.
So it was 96 when my folks opened their computer company. We started in hardware, selling custom computers, clones, stuff. You know, you'd come in, tell them what you want to do with it. They'd build a computer to your needs. It wasn't as commonplace to see those computers for sale at, you know, Best Buy and Sears or Walmart or whatever. A year or two later, they opened up their internet company. So I had some early exposure to web servers, mail servers, networking, you know, how that infrastructure looks, how it works, and how it tied into the telecom system. You know, so at that point, I'd have now I've got background in hardware and how the computers are built, how they function, what pieces of the computer communicate and do what, how it, you know, really how these machines operate. And then kind of got into the networking side of it, right? How web servers communicate, how people at home dial in with a modem, and how that modem makes a request, and how it goes to the telephones and to a server, and what the server does with it, and so on. All right, so it wasn't too long after that I said, well, let's try out this this whole web development game, and let's see if I can figure that out. That's like the next thing I was interested in. You know, I would learn a chapter, kind of get bored with it, want to go to the next one, learn a chapter, get bored with it. And I just kept, at that point in time, I kept needing to feed that craving for knowledge, right? Kept trying to figure out what the next cool thing was and what the next thing I could learn was. And so I think it was probably 98 or 99, I really started spending more and more time in development, web development, right? You know, I'd started in 97 when we got the internet company, but I was still just trying to figure it out, really didn't know anything. And so I started doing websites, and I didn't really feel like I had what businesses needed. Like, I wasn't confident in the product I was delivering. I mean, I wasn't recording a podcast or anything at the time. I was making websites, but... I couldn't figure out how to get a website to do something for somebody, right?
Okay.
Like, how does the business provide a value or a function? Mm-hmm. And, you know, I realized that no matter how pretty I make a website or whatever kind of graphics I do however you make the website interact with a person, if you don't provide some sort of a function, it's very difficult for you to provide a value, right? Obviously, there's some websites out there that are just pretty. A photographer's website where you can go and see their work. Mm-hmm. It really doesn't have any function, so to speak.
Right.
But nowadays, we pay all our bills online. We order our TV online. We look at our children's report cards online. Mm-hmm. Right. All those things are delivered by somebody programming something, interacts with a database, or, you know, it provides some sort of a function. It's not just you going and looking at a website that's stock full of information. Mm-hmm. So I started learning, doing everything I can to learn any language I could get my hands on. And that was 98 or 99.
Okay.
I got into using Adobe Flash, which was just a hot thing back in the day. That used a language called ActionScript.
So that's not a hot thing today?
That's not a hot thing today, man. Nope. Steve Jobs wouldn't have it. So okay. You keep that off my iPhone. You know, I went to school. My teachers didn't like me. I was one of those punk kids, kind of know-it-all. So I got with the dean, and they let me test out, probably because the teacher just wanted me the heck out of their mm-hmm. classrooms.
Is this college?
Yeah.
Okay.
Through my 20s, about 24, 25, I got out of technology for a while. I just kind of wasn't sure if it was really what I wanted to do with my life. You know, at that time, at 25, I'd already been working in a computer store or something for, you know, close to 10 years. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's at that point, it's still, that's a significant chunk of your life, mm-hmm. right? So I was like, maybe I want to do something fun. And I worked at a motocross shop, and I liked riding dirt bikes and ATVs. So it was a cool fit. It paid good money. It was something different. I learned a lot about business. I learned a lot about competition there. I learned a lot about sales. I learned nothing about technology. And, you know, I did it for a while. It was cool. It was fun. But at some point, I realized I kind of needed to get my focus back. And if I was going to build a career, I didn't want to do it in a field where the top was, you know, I'm the top salesman or I'm the general manager. You know, I wanted to be in an environment where the harder I work and the more I build, the farther I can go, or really I set my ceiling, so to speak, right? And in technology, you can do that. You can set your ceiling. How hard do you want to work? How much do you want to learn? What are you willing to study? Because the information that's being released about technology every day is faster than we can learn and consume it. I don't care how fast you are. I don't care what kind of a prodigy you are. Like, you just can't consume it as fast as they release it, as fast as it's created.
So with being a software developer, software engineer, it's something where you're required, just if you want to keep up and do well in your business, you have to be a lifelong learner. Right.
You got to be. You have to be. Yeah.
And that's, of course, one of the, you know, BNI, that's one of our core values is to be a lifelong learner. But for you, if you want to continue to compete, you have to do it.
That's
already built into what you do and who you are.
Right. Even if the programming language itself didn't change, the paradigms or the architecture that you use, the business requirements, that stuff all evolves. Mm-hmm. And so even if you are proficient at using a hammer, if the way nails went into wood tomorrow were different, you'd have to change how you swing a hammer.
Right.
The hammer might not change, but your technique does, mm-hmm. right? Programming languages do change, probably more frequently than hammers do. I don't know how frequently hammers change. But even if the language doesn't change that much, and for somebody who's writing for a while, you know, you change over to the new these new changes pretty simply. What does change is how you use those languages, right? The environment in which you use them. Mm-hmm. You know, 20 years ago, you couldn't build server-side applications in JavaScript, but you can today. Same language, but a completely different context, application, and means of delivery. Mm-hmm. So there's always something you have to learn. There's always something you need to be doing to keep yourself up to that edge.
Now, so you learned, obviously, the networking from a computer standpoint. And then earlier this year, you joined BNI as part of marketing and networking from a business standpoint. So what led you to BNI? How did you get to BNI?
So I had joined the Chamber of Commerce earlier this year, early in 2017. And I met a gentleman there, Evan Robertson. Oh, and
Five and Dime, right?
Five and Dime magazine. Yeah. That's right. Brenda's. And Evan and I just hit it off, man. They were using some products that we have built integrations for. So the very first meeting that I went to at the Chamber, and we talked about some of that stuff, Evan and I hit it off, and we had a good conversation. So him and I followed up and had some lunches to see if there was any way that I could help his business with the products that we use. And for their processes, Evan's already a tech-savvy guy, right? For their processes, he'd already implemented some tools that were met their needs from an efficiency standpoint and also from a budgetary standpoint. Mm-hmm. And so they were in good shape. But Evan and I, from that, built a relationship. And he invited me to come to BNI a couple times. And so I came, I don't know, three times, maybe mm-hmm. three or four times, and then I signed up.
Okay. And so one of the things you and I did before we started recording today was I had you kind of walked you through what we do here in our firm from a process standpoint. And one of the things you said from an efficiency point of view that where you can really help folks is when there's really simple decisions that are made regularly. Can you talk about that a little bit? How
sure.
that specifically, so you can be of assistance?
I say that often. Sometimes it's a great way to explain what we do. Sometimes it's not the best way.
Okay.
It seems like it clicks very well with some people.
Yeah.
In every business, in every workflow, in every process that we do, right, there are tasks that take up human capital. They take our time, but they don't require a lot of decision making. Mm-hmm. They don't require a lot of human influence. They just require somebody to follow through and do a task. And more these days, a lot of that's done on a computer, right? Like, you're doing administrative work, doing client intake, you're processing payments, you're sending out invoices, you're managing a calendar. These are high level actions or processes that businesses use in almost any market segment, right? Or in any industry, I guess.
Right.
I should say. but they also don't require a ton of human influence. They don't require a lot of real in-depth decision making. And so in those cases, it usually pays to have some sort of piece of software developed to automate that process for a business so that they don't need to do it. Mm-hmm. You know, businesses send out invoices daily, weekly, monthly, quarterly, right? And in some cases, it takes a lot of time for a person to create and send out those invoices. Well, how can we create a piece of software that ties the invoicing software into whatever it is you're tracking your services in? Mm-hmm. So with you being an attorney, right, if you had a software that you tracked your hours in, we would write an interface for that software to the billing software so that when you marked a case closed or a billing cycle closed in your project software, that it automatically communicates that data to the invoicing software and automatically sends out an invoice or automatically bills somebody's credit card or checking account if that's what's on file. But that means that a person doesn't need to go in redundant data entry into QuickBooks. They don't need to. We don't need to create an additional opportunity for human error by creating an invoice manually, right? Mm-hmm. Somebody could easily type in information wrong. Not that it happens on every transaction, but we know that human error obviously happens in computers and
data
entry.
The more times you touch it, the more likely that is to happen.
The more times you touch it, that's right. You know, and it cuts out time. So, you know, that's really a microcosm. There's a million things you can do in a business and leverage technology in a way that's a little bit outside the box that we probably don't think about on a day-to-day basis to drive greater efficiency and to make ourselves all more competitive. And I'll tell you, at this point, it's 2017, man. If you're not figuring out how to use technology to make your business more successful or more efficient or more competitive, you're counting your days till you're out of business. You just don't realize it yet.
Right. Right. Yeah. One thing I was talking to you earlier about, in the legal field in particular, we seem to always be lagging behind, you know, technology. We're not using it to the best of that where it could be used. And then, you know, 5-10 years past the point in which, you know, it really became something that everybody else is using, then we say, oh, well, maybe we need to get on board here. But now there's a couple of ways that you can help businesses. Number one, you could either customize, right, build software from the ground up, or you can take existing software and then figure out ways to integrate it with other software or modify in some ways. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Okay. So there's really three ways that we help. Okay. And we can offer our service, so to speak. For the most part, when I communicate with people, there's only two of them that we speak of, but really there's three. Mm-hmm. First one is right from the top, custom software, build something big and bad that was just dialed into your company. All the automation features are specific to your workflows and your processes, right? That kind of a solution is for a company that's usually got a high volume or high throughput process, something they're doing over and over and over every day. If you're selling a product and you sell a lot of them every day, you've got a lot, you know, you iterate your business process over and over again with a high frequency or a high quantity. That's probably a good solution for you because every single spot that you can yield a small amount of time savings, it capitalizes to a much greater return over time, period of time, right? The other one that we commonly do is develop custom interfaces. Let's say you use QuickBooks and Salesforce every day. Salesforce does your accounting and billing. QuickBooks does your accounting and billing. Salesforce is how you track all your customers, right? Well, that's also usually two different employees, salesperson or marketing guys in Salesforce. Accounting, bookkeeping is in QuickBooks. Mm-hmm. And in any place that I've ever worked, there's usually some type of communication breakdown between the sales department and the accounting or bookkeeping, right? Like any kind of interdepartment communication or, you know, intra-department communication really has opportunity for that kind of communication breakdown. Mm-hmm. And so what happens is you have redundant entry. Employees are entering data in both scenarios that's the same data, right? So you double your increase of human error into the system. That human error counts, by the way, when somebody puts an address in wrong and you're sending out invoices. Human error starts to cost you money. Right. It's real error. It's not just you forgot an E in Mr. Jones's name, you know? But what we would do is we would write a piece of software to communicate between QuickBooks and Salesforce. So what would happen is whenever QuickBooks sends out an invoice, it would update Salesforce and say, hey, add an invoice sent out to this, you know, this customer on this date. Now, when a salesman calls a customer up, he can look in that database and go, oh, well, we see here, Mr. Jones, that your invoices were sent out on such and such a date. You've paid it. You were this payment method, whatever. Vice versa, you can also have it where a salesman is on the phone with a customer and in the Salesforce software, say, Mr. Jones wants to sign up for this service that we offer or this product that we offer. Mm-hmm. And Salesforce would then send that over to QuickBooks and automate the billing or invoicing of it. And so you no longer have to worry about this communication breakdown between the two departments. Rely on the software to automate that step in the procedure. Mm-hmm. You know, that, and that does a few things, right? It's not just about accuracy or data integrity, but it also makes the process far more efficient, right? If your staff aren't spending time sending messages back and forth with each other, that salesman's spending more time calling customers,
right,
and that bookkeeper spending more time keeping the books organized. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, if you're paying a bookkeeper to keep your books organized,
right,
why do you want to do anything besides that?
Sure.
If you've got a salesman whose job is to sell stuff, why do you want them doing anything besides that?
Right.
Right. Focus on what you're there to do to provide value for the team. Let the technology do everything else.
So you mentioned the customized software. You mentioned the custom interface. Mm-hmm. And then what was the third?
So the third one is where we take something off the shelf. It's typically an open source product. Mm-hmm. I don't think that most people are familiar with what open source is, but it's really just software that you can usually obtain without paying for it.
Okay.
And the source code is open, meaning as a developer, I have access to what they did to program that piece of software.
Okay.
And so sometimes we can take a piece of software off the shelf that's considered an open source
mm-hmm.
product
mm-hmm.
and modify that product slightly to fit a business's needs. And in some cases, that's really the most cost-effective way for a business to go. You know, if a business doesn't need something that's too complex or creative, or they have a low throughput on their business workflows, then sometimes a smarter solution for them is to just take something that already exists that is close to what they need and just make some small changes to really kind of massage that product to fit the business's needs.
Okay.
And as a business grows and they find greater efficiency or they need additional features, you grow and you expand. But it's kind of like the stepping stones, right? Those are the stepping blocks.
Mm-hmm.
Your entry level might be to find something small and open source and simple. And when you're ready for your next step up, you go to something where you do custom interfaces, because sometimes you can take those open source products and interface them. You interface it with your Gmail, interface it with automated email marketing and marketing campaigns, you know, and then you can go all the way up to the top level where you're doing something completely custom, you know. We spoke with someone recently. Oh, here, we have a client who has a stem cell practice,
mm-hmm.
and they use between 10 and 12 different online platforms to manage their marketing, which is a lot to try mm-hmm. to manage
sure.
at one time.
Yeah.
There's two different text messaging softwares. There are email campaigns. There's automated communication tools. They have a call center whose software ties into all this. And so what we do for them is we wrote a dashboard. We created an analytics dashboard where one of the owners of the practice can log in and look at the analytics, track the performance from a quantitative perspective
mm-hmm.
at any given moment's notice. And our software is pulling data from these 12 other third-party vendors. It aggregates all into one location. And now that business owner is able to determine how much money he spent to capture each lead, where that lead came from, Facebook, Twitter, websites, seminars,
mm-hmm.
all the way through their process to 6 months after a procedure and follow-up. They literally have a hard cost, including marketing expense, on every single patient that comes through their door.
Yeah.
It's pretty powerful.
It's huge, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So a couple other things. Obviously, we're looking for ways that we can pass you business, right? And we're looking for clients out there that can use your business. So who would be an ideal client or customer for you?
So that's a tough question to answer, right? Because a lot of businesses really
sure.
could benefit from this.
Sure.
However, what I would say at a basic level is any business that knows what their process is really a good customer. The business that's still young and they're changing their process, they don't want to spend a bunch of money on having custom software developed and in 6 months go, well, we need to change our business process.
Mm-hmm.
And then they need to redo their custom software,
mm-hmm.
right? That completely defeats the purpose of their investment, their initial investment in software. So I'd say first things first, you got to at least know your processes.
Okay.
You know, you have to have them somewhat solidified. Not saying that you can't change, not saying that we can't make modifications to software to support the business's growth, but at some level, you want to really know kind of, this is how our business operates. I'm ready to pour gasoline on this thing.
It can't just be somebody who's just kind of winging it and just getting by day to day, but somebody who's really taking some time to analyze their process, their system, and so that they can articulate that to you, and then y'all can together work through and figure out, all right, this is where things could be done more efficiently,
right,
et cetera.
If you catch yourself every time you run through your business process going, oh, maybe we should do it this way, maybe we should do it that way, mm-hmm. you don't want to invest in this yet.
I got you. You're not ready. Yeah. For this to be as effective as it could be.
For it to not be as effective, that's a good way to say
it. So what would be some triggers? If I'm talking to that, you know, a friend of mine who owns his own business or talking to somebody out there, what would be some triggers that I could listen for where I could say, you know what, I think Stephen could help you out potentially. Atlas could potentially help you out.
The guy that can't grow because he's maxed out his resources, okay. Right? He's doing sales full time, his team is full. They're doing as much business as they can, right? They're, in a sense, they're busting at the seams, so to speak, right? Like, people are coming in the door, they're processing they're following their process.
It's not that they're having an issue growing; it's that they don't have the means to continue growing. They have too much business.
That's a good guy. How do you make him more efficient so that his same size team can handle a greater amount of business?
I see.
Right, hiring people costs a company a lot of money. That you got to pay for every year.
I got you.
You got training every time you hire people.
Okay.
And don't get me wrong, I'm not saying not to hire people, obviously, because we all need to continue to hire people to help our businesses grow. Mm-hmm. But sometimes you should be using technology to help your business's growth and not just putting more people in the mix.
Now, how would somebody that fits these categories, how would they get a hold of you? What's the best way to get in touch with you?
Our toll-free number comes straight to my office.
Okay.
That's 888-828-5277. Or you can reach us on Facebook. It's facebook.com/AtlasResults.
Okay.
And we also have a website, atlasresults.com.
Okay.
Facebook's a common one. People like to go on there and send us messages. We respond to those as quick as we can. But our phones, we actually did some automation on our phone system, which is our own product, right? So if somebody calls during the day and we're tied up with clients, you get a voicemail, you leave a message. It transcribes your message, drops it into our company chat room. So anybody else that is available that might not be at a phone, you know, our software engineers don't sit at the phone when to answer calls. Like, they're working on projects.
Right.
But let's say we work on a project for you. You call me up. I'm not able to answer to that moment. I'm with a customer or, you know, we're tied up at the moment, whatever. Mm-hmm. Well, it'll transcribe that voicemail. It'll send it over to our CRM. It'll create a support ticket for you. And then it'll send it over to our chat tool so that a developer knows, hey, I need to get some eyeballs on this. If it's something that doesn't require me or a project manager to get involved, they can fix it right there, go mark that support ticket complete, and the support ticket will turn around and communicate that to the customer so they know it's done.
Okay.
And that's a great example of how we automate some of those smaller processes. That's what we did for ourselves. Mm-hmm. And in our case, it helped us to drop the amount of time it took us to respond to support tickets by roughly 60%.
Okay. Now, we've got about 5 minutes left. We've got a couple things I'd like to do. Number one, our chapter, the Winning Edge chapter, we're having kind of a focus on back to the basics this year, the basics of B&I, the basics of business networking. So I just want to ask you a couple of questions regarding a gains report. So that's the focus for you, the gains report. So what is a gains report?
Well, it's how we track our goals, achievements, interests, networks, and skills.
Okay. And why should I complete a gains report? If I'm a member of a B&I, why should I complete a gains report?
Well, it's really the only way to quantitate your growth in the organization.
Okay.
Right? Like, for one, B&I is not the least expensive of networking opportunities out there, right? Sure. But it absolutely has the power to be one of the best networking opportunities out there.
Right.
But it's just like anything else, man. If you went to high school or you went to college and you didn't track your grades, do you think you would have done well?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, probably not.
Right.
Right, we need to know where we stand so we can tell where we're going. We
hold
need to
ourselves know where we came
from. Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay.
You know, it's part of your map on your journey.
So that tells me what I'm looking for, what my goals are, what, you know, those kind of things. Why would I, when I go to a one-to-one, why would I want to take my gains report and give it to a member that I'm meeting with for a one-to-one?
Well, I'm sure there's probably a couple different answers for that, right?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
The way I see it is that in our organization, you know, there's 50 of us in our B&I chapter,
mm-hmm.
and we're there to help each other meet what our goals are.
Right.
When I go into a one-on-one, you know, when you and I met, I want to figure out how can I find veterans or disabled that I can send your way to help you grow your practice.
Sure.
You know, and the gains is just your map. It's really your treasure map on how, on what you're looking for in those customers.
How I plan
so
to get there.
When I see somebody somebody I know who might be retired or retired vet, it becomes real clear to identify if that guy is or is not somebody who would help you fulfill your plan. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it just outlines it. It makes it very simple to understand where each other are coming from.
Right. And like you mentioned, this can hold myself accountable because, as I put it there, if I'm giving it to all of the members of BNI, they can help hold me accountable as well. Hey, how are you doing on those goals? You had those 6-month goal. You had that 1-year goal. How are we doing on that as well? There's the Giver's Game book Ivan Meiser gave out. He mentioned this about the Gaines Report in the book. He said he tells the story of these two guys who hadn't said more than 2 sentences to each other in the 3 months that they had been members together. They were in completely different fields, so far apart professionally that they were not likely to be giving each other referrals. Through the Gaines exchange, they discovered that they were both soccer coaches at their kids' school. They ended up becoming best buds because at that meeting, these two guys had nothing to talk about. Suddenly, they found they had a lot to talk about, and they started passing each other referrals as a result. So just as almost a secondary purpose for these gains, when you look at the interests and the hobbies and these kind of things that you're engaged in, you can build these relationships. Obviously, the focus is we want to pass one another referrals, and obviously that's one thing that can happen the more time that we spend with one another. All right, last thing, is rapid fire, and we'll close it, shut it down for today.
Feeling the pressure.
All right. What is the best business book or networking book, any book that you have ever read that you would recommend anybody in the chapter read?
I'll tell you, the one that I enjoyed the most, now it's been probably a year and a half since I read it, was by Jack Welch, who was the CEO from GE. Mm-hmm. If I remember correctly, the book was called Winning.
Okay.
But Grant Cardone, I think Grant Cardone's books are great as well. Those two guys, Jack Welch is just, a phenomenal leader, phenomenal CEO. He knows how to build an organization.
Right.
And Grant Cardone just fills you up with energy, man. That guy, he's a hustler. Mm-hmm. He knows sales like nobody's business. And his philosophies are pretty good when it comes to figuring out how to drive your sales team forward.
When, as far as networking, obviously we're, kind of new to this, at least in the BNI section. What is the most important networking trait, in your opinion?
It's probably got to be... self-confidence or having a good foundation of self-esteem.
Okay.
When you go into a room with 75 other people that are dressed well and, discussing their business, you got to feel confident to go up and to just start a conversation with somebody you've never met before.
Okay.
I think breaking the ice, I think, is probably the toughest part for most people when you go into a networking environment, right? Getting the door open and getting a conversation started. It's not keeping the conversation going. Right? It's getting that initial one out there. So, I think it's probably it.
Okay, if you
never
could go
really
back,
thought about it.
If you could go back, say 10, 15 years, and begun doing the networking even sooner, what is one networking secret, if you will, that you wish you had known at that time?
I don't think I know any networking secrets.
No, okay, that's fair.
But you know what? It would have been to just put myself out there more.
Okay,
right. As an IT, as a guy in software or IT, like I'm not exactly the guy that runs to go to every party, that runs to every networking event, and it's like, hey, I'm here. It's just not my personality. Mm-hmm. But it makes a difference, right? Mm-hmm. The more you put yourself out there, the more people become aware of you, and the more effort you put into building those relationships, the more people seek out your help when the time comes that they need your company services.
Right.
So, just building a company, it doesn't matter if you have a great product. If no one knows it exists,
right,
you got to get out there and do it.
And then this could be networking. It could be anything at all. What is the most profound piece of advice that you would give anyone or you've ever been given?
I almost don't even want to say it because it's so cliche, but it was perception's reality,
okay,
right? When I was 20, I don't know, maybe 24, working for this dude in the power sports industry, I got hired on to work in their finance department. I didn't know anything about finance, and I was one of the youngest that have 80 employees, and I was a manager. So some of these guys had 30 years in the field. Now, they're 50 years old, have 30 years under their belt, got to answer to a 24-year-old. Mm-hmm. That went over great, right?
Right.
Went over terrible. And, it was something that the owner of the company just kept reinstilling, like, You know, however you communicate, just because you see it that way doesn't mean that's how they see it. Right. And you got to figure out how to communicate in a way that people will respond to, and, sure. and in a way that, that works for them, not for you. And mm-hmm. and ultimately, that boiled down to that old saying, like, perception's reality. It mm-hmm. doesn't matter what I mean to say. Right. It doesn't matter what message I'm trying to get across.
If you're not communicating it well.
It matters how they took it. Right. It matters how they perceived it. Sure. It matters how your message was accepted.
Sure.
You know, I think at the end of the day, that's changed the way I communicate to staff, mm-hmm. To, you know, to friends, to my wife. You said this wasn't being sent out, right?
Stephen Awoski, Atlas Results, thank you so much for joining us here in the PMT podcast studio.
Thanks for having me, man. Absolutely. This is fun. This
and,
is cool.
We'll do it again after we kind of get through the group. Thank you for doing
this. Heck yeah.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Winning Edge podcast. Please be sure to check out the podcast notes for contact information for each of our guests, links to their website, and links to more information about the topics discussed in this episode. Until next week, happy networking.